Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Matinair on Air. My name is Greg Box, sitting in for Jane Matinair, who is currently on vacation. We'll be returning on Monday. We hope she is well-rested and well-relaxed. You are listening to, of course, Matinair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. You can get in touch with us by calling the number or texting us at that same number, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC, or you can drop a comment on the live stream. We are currently live streaming on Facebook, YouTube, and the site that we in this house still call Twitter, because it really gets on Elon's nerve, I hope. That little laugh you heard right there is from my guest host for today, guest co-host.
Yes.
Everyone, welcome back to the show, Angela Lang.
Thanks for having me. Always a good time.
Of course. Angela is the executive director and founder, right,
yep,
of Block, Black Leaders Organizing Our Communities. She's going to be joining us all morning, so we're going to be talking about some fun things, including labor. We're going to be talking about J.D. Vance, and we noticed we separated those two things. We're also going to be talking to Earl Ingram at 10:33 to talk about Labor Fest that he went to yesterday. He's a lifelong labor member. He's been a part of that for decades. So we're going to talk to him at 10:33, get his thoughts on yesterday, as well as just the whole movement in general in the country and how it's working its way in our election. Now, as always, we have on the boards Mr. Calvin, Sweet Cal B., Lord, Board Lord, how are you doing? How was your weekend?
Too short, even though it was long, but good.
That was very philosophical. Too short, even though it was long. That was like a haiku.
Something like that.
Yeah. So, but you had a good weekend, though, overall?
Yeah, it was good.
Good. Excellent. And then at 11 o'clock, we are going to be, what are we talking about at 11 o'clock, Angela? I believe we are talking.
The world.
The state of the world.
Oh, we're going to be talking about, yeah. So at 11 o'clock, we're going to be talking about a I don't think they're new, but they are a PAC group called Jefferson Rising, and they released, an attack ad on Tammy. I can't find it anywhere because it's all on streaming services, mm-hmm, but we'll talk about that later and how just, you know, maybe they need new writers. And 11:21, a new segment called This, Let's Not Do This. It's called Let's Not Do This. Yeah, right, Calvin? We're going to do Let's Not Do This?
Yeah, I'm excited.
What do you want to talk about?
I got some very peculiar, bizarre, morbid campaign text messages this weekend.
And Calvin can't figure out if they're serious or not. So we're going to talk more about that at 11:20. And then finally, wrapping up the show, Angela has been watching the Paralympics.
Yeah.
It's in France, right?
Yeah.
It's also in France. Okay, so we'll be talking about that at 11:33. If you've been watching the Paralympics, let us know. Give us a call. Comment. Text us. We'd love to hear from you. Are you watching a specific sport? Are you just enamored with? Are you just Olympics all the way from start to finish? All the Olympics all the time? So let us know. And also, happy back to school to all the parents from three childless cat ladies.
Yeah.
The three of us. All three of us are childless, sad, miserable cat ladies. But you know what isn't miserable, Angela?
What?
Labor Fest.
Yeah.
We had Labor Fest yesterday. Have you ever been to Labor Fest?
Indeed, I have. When I worked for SEIU, it was one of those, it's Labor Day, but you gotta work type of things, and we'd flex later. But yeah, I had been to Labor Fest at least like 10 plus years.
Yeah.
Whether it was like a student and participating in that way and supporting labor and marching down to Summerfest, or it was working. I also remember it's gotten to be this time where it's like every time there's a presidential election, mm-hmm, you can always count that one of the candidates is going to be at Labor Fest that year. So I remember seeing Obama a few years ago. I remember seeing Obama come and stump for other people. But it's always like a really good time to bring folks together and just to be with like your labor people, your labor family.
Yeah. I've gone to Labor Fest a few times. The most memorable one for me would be in 2008 when Barack Obama was running. I was on the campaign.
Yeah.
And we got there before everyone else and we're quote unquote organizing the inside, but that's all taken care of. So we're just kids in Obama t-shirts running around going, this is so cool. And it was electric. I think what you said is very true. It's that sense of family. You know how you get when you're around your family. No matter how, you know, you got SEIU, you've got all these different unions there, you've got WEAC there, you've got all these groups. And I don't know how they feel about each other. I'm sure they love each other deep down, but at the end of the day, we're family. We're union. We're union strong.
Yeah.
So that feeling of, we're all in this together. And, you know, Barack Obama has this amazing speech and this year was no different.
Yeah.
We got Minnesota governor and VP nominee and
Midwest dad.
I wish he was my dad. Mr. Tim Walls there. He was there and he talked for about 20 minutes or so. And there is no phoning it in for him.
Mm-hmm.
On a great many things, I must say. Like, he always speaks with the biggest, like, whether he's talking about the strength of the unions, education, or just, like, you know, making sure your gutters are properly cleaning your house. You're like, yes, you are passionate about everything, sir.
Yes.
And he did not disappoint yesterday. And Calvin, we have a clip of him just towards the beginning of his speech in Milwaukee yesterday at Labor Fest. You want to play that first clip?
This guy has made it clear how he stands. He's sitting down at Mar-a-Lago after he got elected president, and this was his exact quote. He's talking to a bunch of folks at Mar-a-Lago. You're rich as hell, and we're going to give you a tax cut. At the same time, he was telling workers they get paid too much already. That's who this guy is. You tell me who in Wisconsin is sitting around saying, damn, I wish they'd give billionaires tax cuts and screw me over. Damn, I wish they'd take my health care away. I wish they'd underfund my public school. I wish they would make my job more difficult, more dangerous. And then at the end of the day, I wish they'd make me work till I'm 75 years old. No one's saying that. No one's asking for that agenda. What they're asking for is to be treated fairly with dignity. That's what we have.
And it's not a crazy notion, Angela.
No.
Just want to be treated with dignity.
Straightforward. Period.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah.
And yet the ovation for it is like, yes, that is what I want too.
It's almost like people were breathing a sigh of relief. Like, yes, finally someone said it. And finally someone said it in, like, the very straight, plain, straightforward English. Because I think there's, like, people don't even feel themselves represented in some of these candidates sometimes because they feel that they're talking around them or over them or they're talking about policy. Tim Walls is not that guy.
No.
Like, you can hear from the language he uses. You know, he ain't dropping any F-bombs, but he's got some, you know, some swear words in there and speaks very passionately.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's good. And one of the things that struck me when I was watching the speech yesterday was kind of this dynamic between him and Kamala and how, like, he almost has to be that guy because as a black woman, she cannot.
Yes. We talked about this last week off air. And, you know, if you don't know, folks, I am a white gentleman.
What?
I am whitest upon white. But one of the things, and, you know, I don't want to speak a turn and assume too much, but, like, reading Barack Obama's book and reading Michelle Obama's book, one of the things they both talk about is the struggle of trying to show passion about what they're talking about without crossing that very thin, just weak line of, oh, emotional, oh, angry, oh. And I think that when Kamala Harris was running in 2020, when I voted for her in the primary, thank you very much. It's like, it's like when your favorite indie band gets a major label signing. You're like, oh, I've liked her for years. Mm-hmm. But people say, like, oh, she wasn't a good candidate. She wasn't, she didn't have energy. Well, first of all, she was running against so many
people. Yeah.
But she was also walking that thin line. And I think we see more of her true personality coming out in her events, in her interviews. The CNN interview last week was not good in its presentation. Her answers were great because she just was no nonsense, in my opinion.
Yes, yes.
But you're right. Absolutely. She can't be what Tim Walz is. She can't be what Joe Biden is.
But that message needs to still get out there through a messenger.
Yep.
And I also think about, you know, not to rehash, you know, something sad, but I also think about when Mandela Barnes ran for U.S. Senate. And they were saying all sorts of nasty things about him. And the man had to make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. You know, as a response, because what does it look like to be the angry black man or the angry black woman? And for me, I've crossed that line. I don't care. You can call me the angry black woman and that's fine. And I've kind of reclaimed that term. The first time I was called that, I was very upset, as one would be. But I'm like, no, I'm a black woman. And so, of course, I'm angry.
Yeah.
And if you don't like what I'm saying, then, like, maybe let's have a conversation of why that makes you feel that way. Maybe there's some stuff that you need to unpack. Like, I think it's so funny, this, like, label of, like, the angry black person. Every time I see it used, it's around black people that are trying to push the movement to be better and that are saying the uncomfortable truths, but the truths that have to be said. But it's so much easier to just say, this makes me uncomfortable, so I'm going to label you the angry black person instead of dealing with my own stuff.
Yeah, because if I say, Angela, what you're saying, it makes me uncomfortable, even though it's truth. Me saying I'm uncomfortable makes me weak, and I can't be weak, exactly. Especially if I'm a man.
Yep.
If I'm a man, I can't be weak.
Right.
I'm not allowed to be, because Tucker Carlson said the men are ending and testosterone levels are going down. So instead of admitting my own faults,
you have to place it on someone else.
Yeah. And I love the plain spokenness of Tim Walz and Joe Biden too. Joe Biden, I mean, he's a pedigree politician.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he still is able to connect to the every person. But when you say things like that, you also have to ask the question. It's like, okay, yeah, but why do they get to be plain spoken?
Yeah.
Where other people would just sound dumb. Or, you know, if Joe Biden gets angry about taxes,
that's he's passionate.
He's passionate.
Exactly.
Kamala is emotional.
And yep.
We've had these discussions many
times.
We've
had it with Hillary, yeah, too, to be fair. Yeah. But the difference is that people said that Hillary was more like robotic, or, you know, I didn't see humanity in her, or whatever people tried to say. And now it's like you have Kamala that has to deal with like the race and gender issue, which I think not very many high profile elected official leaders have had to deal with that. Just look at how many Black women are elected across the country. And so I think it's just interesting. I remember seeing a tweet when I think it was the same Sunday that she announced that she was running and Joe Biden stepped aside. And there was a Black woman that was like, every Black woman in America knows exactly what she's going to have to deal with and how she's going to have to navigate this over the next several months. Because it's like, we just know. Like, okay, yep, we know what she's in for. We know the attacks. I'm waiting for Donald Trump to say something even more racist, because I think it's very clear that the campaign is getting under Trump's skin.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just waiting for him to drop the hard ER. If people don't know what that is, you might want to Google that. That is not a word I will say on air. But it is, we're waiting for some of that. And I think it's interesting how these dynamics are playing out.
Absolutely. And we're going to keep the conversation going, talking about Labor, someone who didn't have a good showing in front of folks who belong to a labor
union.
Womp womp, Mr. J.D. Vance. We're going to talk about J.D. Vance talking to the working man. Is he a friend of the working man? Is he the working man? We'll talk about that more in a second when we return with Angela Lang as our special guest co-host on this Tuesday. Calvin on the boards. Don't forget 10:33, Earl Ingram from the Earl Ingram Show will be here talking about Labor Fest and the union movement. Don't go anywhere. Stick around. Stay close. Stay hydrated. You are amazing. This is Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning. Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. I can't help it. I think it's interesting. If you're watching the live stream right now, my name is Greg Bach, by the way, sitting in for Jane Mattanera, who's currently on vacation. If you're watching the live stream, which is on Facebook, YouTube, or the place that we still call Twitter because Elon gets all huff about it. That was Rush's Working Man, their first big hit off their first record. If you watch that live stream, you're going to see me, the old guy, rocking out. Calvin on the board just kind of doing his thing, and Angela on her phone like, well, that's fine. And me, I'm like, this is my jam! They call me the working man! Can't help it. I love Rush so much. All right, so we're back. We have Angela Lang, guest co-hosting today. We're very, very happy to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're going to be on other shows this week. Tell us more.
Yeah, y'all are going to get sick of me. No. So Maggie Dawn, I believe, is also still on vacation. And so Matt Rothschild will be on both. I think he's on all this week, okay, but I will be joining him, guest co-hosting with him both tomorrow is Wednesday and Thursday. I was like, what is it?
Time is an illusion.
So y'all got me for 3 days in a row for like 6 hours. So get comfy and pop your popcorn.
Because opinions about to be happening.
Opinions.
We were talking about Labor Fest. We were talking about the fact that Tim Walz was in town here in Milwaukee for Labor Fest yesterday. I mean, and honestly, I love Kamala to death, but no person belongs at Labor Fest more, I think, than Tim Walz.
Yeah.
He is absolutely dyed-in-the-wool labor, dyed-in-the-wool union, proud of it. And Calvin, we have another clip of him talking about, just this, the notion of Republicans trying to use that sort of association against him, and this is his response.
I can remember, and this was one, Republicans came up to me in one of my campaigns, and they said, Tim is in the pocket of organized labor. I said, that's a damn lie. I am the pocket. I am the pocket.
That needs to be a t-shirt.
Yeah. I know someone already has it in print.
I told them, if you want to attack me for standing up for collective bargaining, for fair wages, for safe working conditions, for health care and retirement, you roll the damn dice. I'll take my chances on that. I'll take my chances.
And that's something that, you know, I wanted to discuss with you a little bit before we moved on to Vance, whatever his name is, Judd Vance, James, as some people call him, is that if, in my opinion, union used to be a dirty word in this state, at least. And I'd say probably around 2008 to 2010 that, you know, with the Tea Party movement, Act 10 and 32.
Yep.
Really, like, if you identified as being part of a union, you were seen as a troublemaker, you were seen as a taker, you were seen as all these pejoratives. And in the past, I'd say since Joe Biden got into office, I really feel like that label, that association has taken on a new light, really been part of the conversation in a positive way. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but that's what I feel like. People are standing up union proud and not getting... tomatoes thrown at them.
Yeah. And everything that I'm going to say is from a former labor organizer, but also someone that got my start in some of the labor organizing during the Act 10 fights. Right. And so I remember being thrown into the labor movement in the most tumultuous times. And I'm getting a crash course and I'm understanding. I was one of those people in the snow and was living on Ian's pizza for days on end because we were sleeping over in the Capitol with that hard, cold floor and seeing so many people. And I know we all have remembered those images of like the tens of thousands of people that were all at the Capitol.
I was walking around. Yep.
If you weren't there, you definitely felt some sort of connection. Mm-hmm. And I remember after that, too, then they had the recalls of Scott Walker. And it became like such a thing. This is when I noticed the first big divide in our state. Did you sign the Scott Walker recall or not?
Yeah.
That's how people were having relationships and conversations depending on what side. Did you sign on or not? And then it was like the list was public. So then you could search anyone's name. Mm-hmm. And then like that became like a dividing line. There wasn't the whole like, oh yeah, we're Midwesterners. We disagree, but we're going to grab a beer later. Like this was a deep divide. And I think it's taken a long time, you know, also with like right to work, as, you know, he said, right to work for less. We know what that means.
Yeah.
And so I remember being at SEIU during the right to work fight. And I was like, what does this mean for the future of the labor movement? And it was very dark and bleak for a while. And it was hard to organize and to get folks to feel that like labor power was actually effective. But now I feel like we're starting to get back to that. And you see folks unionizing at Starbucks, at Amazon, at all of these places. And so I think that we're at a tipping point now, and I think it's only going to progress. But I will say that the only way that the labor movement will get stronger is only if it is a multiracial, inclusive labor movement. Because I think a lot of times it's people want to divide us by race and understanding that there is a class unity there. But they're like, we're going to divide you all by race so that class folks don't come together and actually organize. So I think that's something that we all need to be aware of, that like the 1% or the powers that be, like they don't want us to unite, and they intentionally use race as a way to divide us.
And speaking of dividing, Brian Schimming tweeted, I think this weekend, about the labor movement and said like no one has done more for the working man than Republicans, even though there's video of Scott Walker and Diane Hendricks on
Divide and Conquer.
How do you crush the unions?
Yes.
Right to work. So don't come at me, Brian Schimming, with anything other
There's
than...
There's literal receipts.
Which face, Brian, are you talking with?
Right.
Mouth are you talking out of right now? And another person who's no fan of the working man is Ohio Senator / VP nominee for the GOP / constantly confused man, J.D. Vance, who went in front of gave a speech in Boston in front of firefighters and got... booed.
Yikes.
Got booed by the firefighter union audience before his speech at a conference on Thursday. And he said something like, that's okay. Listen to what I have to say here and I'll make my pitch. Nope.
Yeah.
No, they know what you're trying to pitch. They've known what you're trying to pitch already.
Yeah.
You don't really care about them. And without getting into it, because we don't have much time, but the firefighters and the police officers are two unions that we is very much like, protected.
Yep.
Even though firefighters did march in Madison.
Yep.
The fact that the firefighters booed you says a lot about you and your party and what you quote unquote do for the working man. And when I asked the question before we went to the first break, I said, you know, were we for the working man? Brendan Lewis, who is a who drops comments all the time here, just said no and no. And it's true. They're not.
No.
They don't care about the working man. They care about the billionaires who run the corporations and whether or not they treat the working people with dignity, respect, fair wages. That's it'll happen when it happens. We got to cut their taxes first.
Yeah.
We cut the billionaires' taxes, then they'll pass along all those savings to their people.
Right.
And billionaires are not growing at an exponential rate in the past 40 years.
Like, yeah.
It's why do they even, like, I guess the question is before we go to break, why do they even bother? But we can. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they shouldn't.
Yeah exactly. We're going to keep talking about Labor Fest, labor unions, and what they mean to one specific man. That is Earl Ingram Jr., who is the host of The Earl Ingram Show every morning, 8 to 10 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go anywhere. Stay close. Stay hydrated. You are excellent. You're listening to Matt and Air on the Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. My name is Greg Box, sitting in for Jane Matt and Air, who is currently on vacation. We'll be coming back to the show on Monday. Hopefully she is well-rested and vacated and relaxed.
Yes.
Can't wait to see her. And we have Angela Lang, the executive director of Block, Black Leaders Organized in Our Communities, as our guest host today. Hello, Angela.
Hello.
And as always, the board lord, Sweet Kelby.
Woop-woop.
Woop-woop, as the kids say. Calvin, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
We're doing even better now because we have a guest in house, the very wonderful, the beloved Earl Ingram of the Earl Ingram Show here on Civic Media. You can listen to that show from 8 to 10 every morning, Monday through Friday. Earl, welcome to Matt and Aaron Air. How are you doing this week?
You know, I'm always doing well, man. Yeah. Anytime we come from celebrating labor.
Yeah,
my heart is always full and warm.
And you were at Labor Fest. You go every year, right?
Absolutely. I've been a part of Labor Fest for now 40 years.
Oh my
God. Wow. Or more.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And you know, we were talking about it before we went on the air, and I knew that you joined the labor union at 18. You've talked about that before, but what I didn't know until now is that you actually have it in your blood before that. Like, it's a family thing for you. Your father was in the union.
Absolutely.
Can you tell us about, like, your family's history with the labor movement?
So it was not only my family, but when the Great Migration from the South took place in this nation, and many blacks from the South migrated to the North because for these jobs and out west for these factory jobs that were available because World War II was taking place. Mm-hmm. And many of the people who normally held those jobs wound up in fighting the war. Then, you know, these manufacturers wound up, including the plant that I worked at, instead of producing the automobiles and things that they were producing, they started producing munitions. Mm-hmm. And so many of the whites who were normally in those factories wound up going to fight in the wars because blacks at the time weren't exactly welcome to do that. And so it opened the door for women and men, black men, to both come and start working in those factories. And so many blacks migrated. My father, as well as many others, wound up, you know, coming up north and then going into factories and, you know, living and making great wages and living middle-class lifestyles. They were able to live a middle-class lifestyle and live the American dream. And so I had a father who was able to do that, even though he had 13 children.
That was the thing you said that blew my mind. You said your mother, your father had 13 children and were able to support a family on a union wage, all 13, and live a good life.
One person working.
Yeah.
It wasn't the exception. It was the rule.
Yeah.
At that point in time.
And we're hearing a lot of people talk about, well, if women just were stay home and take care of the kids, and we have they speak as if one income nowadays in 2024 can magically take care of a family, even of one, two, or three kids. But that's not the case. It's because we don't have unions fighting for strong contracts that bring good wages that could possibly do that. But that's not the case. So they make it seem like back when your dad was working, well, that was just it was easy to do. But that's not the case anymore because we don't have that union presence in business because the unions have gone away because the jobs, at least in Milwaukee, have changed.
Well, a couple of things. Number one, the unions, back in 1983, over 20% of this nation was a part of a union.
Mm-hmm.
Contrast that today with only 10%.
Yeah.
And the private unions, especially, which have taken the hardest brunt, the hardest hit, the ones who have suffered the most. And, you know, you look at the government unions,
mm-hmm.
and 37% of the people who work for the government are unionized.
Just 37%.
Well, yeah, but that's still pretty good considering private unions only make up 7%. When you talk about government unions, you're talking about the police, the fire, educators. They're talking about people who work in the government. Many of those people are involved in unions, and so they're protected, and they have not suffered like the private unions have. Republicans went after private unions and intentionally destroyed private unions. And led people to believe that people who worked in unions were lazy and shiftless. And, you know, we live in a nation that talks about rugged individualism.
Mm.
And so they've led people to believe that you don't need the support of unions. You can make it on your own. And so there are people who don't, like now, 90% of the American people don't belong to unions. And so they don't know the value of the union. They don't know what transpired because they don't see that. And so I think more than anything else, we've got to get people to understand exactly what unions' purpose are and why it's, you know, we've kind of went down this rabbit hole once they start destroying unions intentionally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So understanding and what you had talked about of your upbringing and how you were able, you and your family were able to sustain and how that has drastically changed. What do you see as the future of the labor movement, also specifically in Wisconsin?
Future of the labor movement is something has to be tied into educating the American people to the value of a union. When 90% of the American people don't know anything about unions, when I say they don't know about it, they don't know enough about it to understand the value of it. And I don't blame them. They haven't lived that experience. And so they don't realize that what they make can be tied into, group reality as opposed to individual. Yes, there are individuals who can overcome and may be able to navigate a system set up in this nation the way it is, but the majority of the American people can't do that on their own, and that's the reason why so many people are suffering and struggling today, because they are dealing with a system that is almost impossible to crack individually.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If the unions were so horrible, why are the police and fire prospering through them? Why are the educators prospering through them? Why are the tradespeople prospering? Those are the major unions that still exist, and those are the ones who know the value of it. We've got to get the rest of the American people to understand what they know.
Yeah.
You said that when you joined the union when you were 18.
That's correct.
And you and it says in the booklet you showed you worked for A.O. Smith for 34 years. Talk to us about just that time at A.O. Smith and what being in the union helped get you as, you know, a good wage, supporting a family. You talk about your middle class life that you were able to lead because of that. Tell the people of that, like from the, you know, kind of give us an overview from.
So it was not just A.O. Smith. It was Alan Bradley, Alex Sharma, Slitz, Miller, American Can, Continental Can, Babcock and Wilcox. We were an industrial metropolis.
Yeah.
Milwaukee was called, was called the machine shop of the world, not of the state or the country, of the world. So we produced everything in this city. Mm. And so when I graduated in 1972 and was scheduled to go to the University of Stout, my father told me, and I said, well, I'm going to go work at A.O. Smith and make me some money. And he said, don't go. But he couldn't explain to me that if I went, I would be attracted to the money.
Yeah.
And I would never leave there and go to college. Mm-hmm. But I will say this. It's the best dead-end job somebody could possibly have. You were able to take your children on vacations, to buy a home, to mm-hmm. save money, to live the American dream.
Yeah.
Everybody who was involved in industry back then was able to live the American dream.
Yeah.
Make enough money to put away, to send your kids to college, get a pension that I've been living on now for over 20 years that allows me to live a strong middle-class lifestyle. And even after I'm gone, that pension will then support my wife even after I'm gone. These are the things that unions brought to people.
Yeah.
Security, an opportunity to live that American dream that no longer exists in the private sector, but continues to thrive, you know, in the governmental sector.
Absolutely. And that's something that, you know, we see a lot of young people, you know, I'm between the generations, but them, when they speak about, you know, not being able to afford a home, not being able to move out of the house, not being able, you know, they struggle with finances because the job opportunities are so different than where they were when you were 18 years old and having the opportunity to walk into A.O. Smith, get a job. And as you, I mean, I know you're laughing, but like it was a career for you and it was, but.
No, I'm not laughing.
No. I mean, but you laugh when you call it the best dead end job you ever had. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. But it's making young people aware of that, like there are union jobs out there. There are career vocations out there going and not just working at a machine shop, but also like going to a tech school and getting trained for a job that'll put you in the union that will get you a great wage. And that skill never goes away.
Right.
Man, let me respond to that because it's what I do all the time. And it's what we talked about yesterday at Labor Fest. Labor Fest used to be the tradespeople, the private unions, and the governmental unions, everybody all together. The private unions have since kind of been depleted, but Labor Fest is mainly many of the people who are in the trades who live strong upper middle class lifestyles. An electrician, a plumber, a steam fitter, a carpenter. Those people make over $100,000 a year. Inside of 5 years, you'll be able to make $100,000 in those trades. And I tell you what, as all these other jobs are offshored or you know, technology replaces them, they'll never replace a plumber, electrician, a steam fitter, a tool and die maker. And these guys make more money on the side almost than they do working. You ever need to call a carpenter? You ever need to call a plumber?
Yeah.
And many times it's the people who do that for a living and work for a company, but then make more on the side almost than they do doing that. And that's all legal.
So I, as someone that's like worked in the labor movement and organized and all of that, and I think seeing kind of the evolution of labor in the last 10 years, especially in Wisconsin, and seeing things how they've changed, I think it's also worth noting that no membership of any organization is homogenous, right? And so there is a divide, I think, in some labor folks, and everything that you say about making sure that there is a higher quality of life for union members. But yet you had the president of the Teamsters speak at the RNC, and there are some union folks that are what I feel voting against their interest, because the people that want these higher standards and livable wages and benefits are not folks that were at the RNC. Can you speak a little bit about that?
So as I interviewed many union members on yesterday at Labor Fest, that we're going to wind up playing back in the next few days, one of the things that I clearly spoke to them about, especially the hierarchy of the union and the labor movement, was that tradespeople vote Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And we had that conversation because it's absolutely correct.
Yep, yep.
And in one of the responses from one of them, he mainly talked about the fact that they didn't realize, when you weren't there at the beginning and you don't realize that people had sacrificed in order for you to get those benefits and get where you are, you don't know the history of it.
Sure. We're going to keep this conversation going on the other side of the break. We got Earl Ingram as our guest for on this Tuesday. Angela Lang is our guest co-host. Calvin on the boards. My name is Greg Bach. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning. Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. My name is Greg Bach. I am sitting in for Jane Matt and Air, who is currently on vacation, having some fun. She'll be back on Monday. We have Angela Lang as our guest co-host today. We have Calvin behind the boards and the incomparable Earl Ingram of the Earl Ingram Show, which you can listen to 10 a.m. I'm sorry, 8 a.m. to 10. He is our lead-in. 8 a.m. to 10 every day, Monday through Friday, on the Civic Media Radio Network. And Jack, I see you on the line. We're going to take you in a moment, but I just want to go over something really quick. First of all, when you have Earl on the show, there's conversation happening between the breaks, and it's always great. And yeah. I wanted to actually highlight it because it was something that you asked before we split for a moment, talking about, you know, why are some union people voting against their interests? And one of the things, Earl, you brought up was not knowing the history.
Yeah.
And can you talk more about that, both of you?
Yeah, I mean, Earl, I think that it's important to know that I think people are like, oh, when I first got introduced to unions, it was through the Walker fight. So I got a crash course in it, but I was like, okay, unions, I thank them for my weekends and 40-hour work weeks. But I didn't know all of the layers and the struggles. But once I did, I became much more of a fierce advocate, being able to, you know, inoculate and say, this is what the unions have done. But yet still, there are folks, I think, that see the Republican Party as the union members that see the Republican Party as their home, despite not knowing that they would actually decimate unions and union rights. And so like that tension and holding it. And I think you're absolutely right that it is rooted in not knowing that history of how you even got to your cushy comfortable middle-class status and why it's important to continue the fight as well.
Well, police and fire are a prime example. Police and fire bless them. They've chosen professions that all of us couldn't do. And so, and they're rewarded handsomely for it. When you can retire after 20 years, full pensions, and don't pay Social Security, you can do pretty well for yourself. And so, but the problem with that is they vote Republican because they believe that they're in their positions because of Republican policies. But I've always pushed back and said, what do you think the right to work is?
The right to work,
which is what Scott Walker ushered into this state, devastated unions.
Yes.
And I thought it was always crazy to say I can remain a union member without paying my union dues. That's what the right to work did. It forced unions to accept and fight for people who chose not to even be a part of a union.
Yeah.
And yet those union funds that came in to support the union's activities were taken away. And they were taken away because Republicans were upset with the unions, especially supporting Democrats. And this was a way to destroy the foundation economically that unions in supporting Democrats. So that's part of one of the reasons why they did the things they did to try to destroy the unions in this country, Republicans anyway. Yeah.
Jack from Merrimack, as always, we love having you on the show. Jack, what say you today?
I'll try to make this quick. The big lie from the Walker era Republicans was this. Those greedy teachers and the teachers union, they're just getting too much money and too many benefits. More than you, better than you. So we've got to curb the teachers union because teachers are better off than you. It's the great Walker divide and conquer strategy. And I say no. What people need to understand, especially with record profits of big corporations, those that aren't in a union need to join one to improve the wages and benefits that they have. And if you're not, you need to vote for someone who will work to increase the minimum wage, because that really is the tide that lifts all boats. And to work towards Medicare for all, so you don't need to worry as much about those benefits, and support it by taxing the rich and richer corporations appropriately. Those rich, they scream about, oh, this is redistribution of wealth. It's communism. But what we're now in is a redistribution of wealth. It's towards those that already have the most, and they use that wealth, that excess wealth, to buy power from our politicians. That's not communism. It is one definition of fascism, and it certainly is an oligarchy. So that's the end of my rant for this morning.
Thank you, as always,
appreciate
Jack.
It.
Thank you for calling, Jack. We appreciate hearing you. Brendan on the live stream said, the labor section of Project 2025 spells out the true example of those on the right voting against their better interests. Ignorance on the labor section of 2025 is why you have to wonder why MAGA is really looking for. And it's true. It's like, it goes back to what I was saying before, is Brian Schimming of the Wisconsin GOP says that, you know, they're for the working man. No, they're not. They're divide and conquer. They want to make way for the billionaires and millionaires and make sure they pay as little as taxes. And it's through the work, Earl, that you've done, as well as you, Angela, and the people I spoke to last week for yesterday's episode. We talked to labor leaders, is securing the rights and the, you know, giving the working class, who politicians talk about all the time, that ability to live the life that you're talking about, Earl. And I want to just thank you for the work you've done for the past 4+ decades and the history you have with the labor union, and appreciate you being here today. Thank you so much.
My last thing is, my fight is for young people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That they have the opportunity that I had.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to continue to battle, as many of us from my generation are, to make sure the young people get that same opportunity that we had.
Well, you can continue to listen to that message that Earl is talking about, fighting the good fight.
Yes.
Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., right here on the Civic Media Radio Network, on the very conveniently named Earl Ingram Show. Earl, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
All right, thank you. We're
going to take a small break. We're going to take time to get water, get hydrated, get a snack. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the Paralympics. We're going to be talking about weird, creepy ads. And, you know, we're going to be talking about a lot of fun here with Angela Lang as well. And we're going to be, of course, Calvin is on the board. You are listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay close.